Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Bike Radar Podcast, brought to you by the team behind BikeRadar.com, Cycling Plus, and MBUK magazines. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe. And if you can do so, leave us a rating on your podcast provider of choice. It really helps us reach other cyclists like you.
We're talking all things gravel for our new seven-part podcast series here on Bike Radar, hosted by yours truly, Catherine Moore. From getting kitted out with the best gear for you to route planning, dipping your toes into gravel racing and simply why we love hitting the path less travelled, we've got a mega panel of special guests and in-house experts lined up for you. In this episode of our Gravelly podcast series, we're tackling the art of planning a gravel ride, which, as I'm sure we can all attest to, can make the difference between having a mega day out on the bike and a disastrous one. I'm joined remotely by my good pal, serial adventurer and hammerhead ambassador, Gabby Thompson, who knows a thing or two about route planning as Komoot's global community manager. Gabby is calling in from her home in Morzine, so she's literally surrounded by amazing gravel trails, not to mention mountain passes, mountain biking trails, hiking and ski touring routes. Hey, Gabby.
Hi, Catherine.
Sat beside me in the podcast studio, we also have some familiar faces too, with Bike Radar's Jack Evans and Robin Furtado. Both Robin and Jack have enjoyed their fair share of exploration by bike, including established routes such as the King Alfred's Way and the Celtic Trail, as well as some more homemade plans. Welcome both.
Hi.
Hi, Catherine.
We're talking today about planning gravel rides, and there's several different things for me that springs to mind. How about for you? What are the first things when you're thinking about planning gravel routes, or gravel rides, should I say, that come to the forefront?
My first thought tends to be, how boggy are the bridleways going to be?
That's a very British answer, I think.
Yeah, because not being blessed with loads of firm, smooth gravel tracks around Birmingham. I've got to think, how far is it going to be fun to go if the going's heavy? And that tends to be my first consideration. And also some routes, taking in a lot of towpaths, for example, and a little bit sketchy, bordering terrifying if you're at risk of slipping into the Worcester Birmingham Canal.
Yeah, making sure you've got the right tyres then, I guess. And also, like you say there, trail conditions are going to vary massively around time of year. How about you, Gabby, when you're planning one of your alpine epics, what are the first sort of things that come into your mind for planning?
Well, for us, we're always looking a little bit more at the gradient, because what you find in the Alps is often if things haven't been tarmacked, it's because they're too steep to tarmac. So gradient's something I always look for. And I also always check the trail grading. So I do that normally on Komoot, and you can see if it's like S0 up to S5. So that's on the single track grading. And S0, you know it's going to be like compact, rideable gravel. S1 will be like a little bit more interesting, but still like fine for a gravel bike. And then as you start to move up to like S2, S3, that's really mountain bike territory. So I'll always have a look at that.
So that gives you a really good indication if you're planning digitally in advance, you know, is this actually going to be rideable, or is this perhaps a hiker bike section? Maybe I'd be better going a different way.
Yeah, totally. And it's good to like put the two things together out here. So if it's a steep trail anyway, but it's compact, then yeah, maybe it's actually quite nice to ride up. But if you think it's going to be steep and loose, then it's probably a no-go.
Nice. How about you, Robin? If you're planning a gravel ride, if it's something local or perhaps a multi-day thing, what the first sort of things that pop into your mind?
I'm going to say something that I wouldn't have said a few weeks ago because, like, literally last week, I was like, I'm going to go out for a short gravel ride. And I was like, I don't need to take any tools. I can just go for it.
No.
And I got about 9 miles away from my home. Then I got a huge puncture and I didn't have anything with me. And my partner wasn't there. And he couldn't drive over. So I had to walk back in the rain and it was horrible.
Gosh. How far were you walking?
Like literally the whole way. It took so long. And so from that, we'd learn you should always be taking, like, thinking about the tools that you should be bringing with you and just making sure you have everything that you might need for, like, the journey. And that's like either like long, like food or like warm clothes or tools for fixing punctures.
Nice. And I think just from that little reminder, my first thing, incidentally, would be, where can I get food? Because I love, don't get me wrong, I really love very remote places, but I also love passing through little villages and towns if I'm traveling about and enjoying local delicacies like a proper Bakewell pudding in Bakewell, or I don't know, some Stilton in Longclawson or something like that. So I always enjoy adding little cafe stops on my ride.
Definitely.
And that's something that I like to plan in advance for. But I think that just gives you a little flavour, just asking around off the cuff about the first things. Like, there's so many things that you can think about when planning a ride. You don't have to think about them all. It's perhaps safer to think about certain things than others. But it's not simply route planning. And as you said, Robin, a little bit of planning can go a long way and save you walking a long way home.
Yeah.
So why don't we kick off with tools and spares and that sort of thing? I think you certainly do need to carry more when you're on a gravel ride compared to like a road ride, for example, because you tend to be further from a road or civilization, and it's really good to be able to be a bit more self-sufficient and fix that puncture or whatever's gone wrong. What do you typically carry, Jack, when you're going out on your gravel rides to help prepare for that?
I typically take quite a weighty multi-tool that's almost a sort of Swiss Army knife style tool, rather than a small, basically just a wrench set I might take on a road ride, just because it's got basically everything on there. I mean, it's got everything from a bottle opener to a chain tool, so it's really nice. Got you covered.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of thing that really kind of thuds down in your hand. So you don't want it in your back pocket. You're going to want one of those trendy gravel bags, sort of bike packing bags, or a saddle bag.
Bum bag?
Yeah.
Fanny pack?
Maybe even a bum bag, perhaps a canister bag. And you're going to want to put it in there along with puncture repair. As I've said on a previous Bike Radar podcast about choosing the best gravel tyres, I actually still run tubes for gravel. So I always have at least two spare tubes. Good set of tyre levers, of course, and also a better pump, a sort of a more powerful hand pump. Than I might take on my road bike, just because I think some people might have canisters, but I tend to get on well with a solid hand pump that's going to get the tire up nice and quickly. Particularly if the weather turns, you don't want to be fiddling away with a tiny size road pump.
I learned when I did a little bit of guiding, I think it's a really fair point that you can use a gas canister and that's really good, but then it's gone if anything else happens after that. Whereas a pump, you've got it and you can use it as many times as you like, whether that's for you or for some friends. And I didn't realise there's actually a difference between sort of road bike specific high pressure pumps versus more gravel friendly high volume pumps, more for sort of gravel and mountain biking. So that can make a big difference, even if they are a bit more chunky. Again, as Jack Luke would say, luggage is not a crime. Embrace the... Do you use a bum bag or a saddle bag? Gabby, what's your sort of luggage of choice if you're going for a gravel ride?
Yeah, both actually. With my gravel bike, I actually always seem to have some kind of bag on the bike. So I leave my like half frame bag in there all the time. I've got like a small bag on the top and sometimes I'll have like a handlebar bag on there as well. And then if I can get away with it, sometimes I'll ride without a bum bag, just because it's nice, isn't it, not to have the extra weight on your body. But if I'm doing something a bit more adventurous, then yeah, I'll have one of those as well.
Nice. And what are your go-to tools, apart from those ones that Jack have mentioned, tools and spares, the sort of things that you'll take with you?
So I run my tyres tubeless. So I guess I often have a lot of things like tyre plugs with me, so I can try and fix like a hole in the tyre or something like that. But I will also bring tubes because sometimes, yeah. It's not fixable. cable ties, because nice. They can fix almost everything. can't think of what else I would take that's additional to that. I do actually just take a small pump with me. I haven't tried a high volume one yet, but that sounds great. And I did see the other day, just talking about canisters, I don't normally carry canisters on me actually either, just because I'm not organized enough to always have like a full one. But my friend had one with a valve on. So it actually looks super cool because you can top up a tire really quickly, but then you can like cap it. So then you might actually still have enough in there if you had like a second incident or something like that.
I also carry a few other little bits, like a quick link always comes in handy. Make sure that it's the right speed for your chain though. That's top tip. Oh, Jack, is that a mistake that you've made before?
This was a situation that didn't actually befall me this time. It fell a clubmate on a recent RAFA day in hell ride from Birmingham, where following a very technical off-road descent, someone broke their chain, and being on a 9-speed bike, no one had the correct link because we were all riding 11-speed. So unfortunately or fortunately, we were right next to the Fountain Pub. So he later sent us a picture of him enjoying a sandwich and a few pints while waiting for his wife to come and pick him up.
Oh, nice.
But you're not always that lucky. And you're not always so lucky that it's on a really like lovely Saturday.
And right next to the pub.
And
right
next to
the
pub.
Could be in the middle of nowhere in the mountains somewhere. Yeah.
It could have been a lot more. It could have been a lot more remote. So that's definitely worth bearing in mind, the compatibility of the tool and the link and the chain.
A good friend of mine, Claire, I saw her sort of spares and tools kit a few years ago, and that was heavily influential in my own bum bag setup. And she had all sorts of little bits and bobs that might seem a bit excessive, but you know, those tiny, teeny, tiny little super glue packets. So they actually come in really handy for like gluing little bits of tire together. Or I also carry the self-adhesive patches. So you can actually patch a tire from the inside using one of those and then reinforce with super glue and little bits like that. And my absolute favorite is the tire boot, homemade out of a piece of old toothpaste tube. So when you finish with the toothpaste tube, your Colgate or whatever other toothpastes are available, then you can just cut it off, wash it out, round off the corners so you don't have any spiky edges, and you got yourself a free tire boot. That's my top tip.
Great.
So I think, yeah, you definitely do need a lot more stuff with you when you're out on a gravel ride, because, you know, you don't want to be stranded in the middle of nowhere. But it does actually fit down really nicely into a compact size. And as long as you remember to strap it to your bike or leave it in your bag, it shouldn't be too much to think about every single time you ride. But when you're coming onto your ride, you might not want to do the same route every single time. So for somebody who's relatively new to gravel riding, Robin, would you have any tips on how to just get out there? What kind of routes have you got available to you?
I guess I would say go on Komoot. I use Komoot. There are also other ones, but I think probably Komoot's the best for making like good routes. And I think look at what other people have recommended, because you can make it so Komoot knows your ability, so it can do like easy recommendations rather than like hard recommendations. Other people would have put things on the map which will show you where you can go nearby, and so I think just start off quite easy, try and get something that's quite close by, and see if you can get there and back, and then yeah, that should be good.
You say start off quite easy. Have you, like me, learned the hard way that 100 kilometers of gravel is not the same as 100 kilometers of road?
Yes, absolutely. And also gradients. You think climbing, I don't know, like 50 meters on a road is a lot easier than climbing 50 meters on like a really bumpy, rocky bridleway that you're pushing the whole way up, and that's going to take you a lot longer. It's going to be a lot more tiring. So I think thinking about like less climbing to begin with and like shorter distances, just to see like what you can fit in there.
Definitely. And Gabby, living in the Alps, your 100 kilometers of gravel here compared to 100 kilometers of gravel there must be totally different as well.
Yeah, I always think actually wherever I'm riding gravel, I almost like, I find it's comparable to think of 100K on the road and then you times it by like 1.5. So I think 100K of gravel feels almost like doing 150K road ride. I don't know if you can like relate to that. So I always add on like that little bit extra time. And if I go for, I think coming from road riding, I had to get in my head as well that actually going for like a 20K gravel ride, which wouldn't sound like loads on the road, is actually a pretty decent gravel ride.
Definitely.
20K can sometimes take you quite a while, depending where you end up.
When I first started making routes for gravel rides, I was obsessed with getting as much as I could off-road as well. So putting in these kind of like pointless little bridleway tracks that I knew would be like super boggy, or like always going out of the city through a park, which is perfectly fine and good, but like sometimes it's just better to take a road that you know will be much quicker to get you a bit further out or experiencing some new stuff. So I think there's definitely like a sweet spot of road to off-road mix as well that you can find.
And when you mentioned about the bogginess as well, I think if you know there's going to be really thick mud and you're just going to be like squelching through it and you're going to be covered in mud after it, and then you just get cold and muddy. So sometimes it's good to avoid those routes.
Yeah, definitely. And we're really blessed in the UK to have such a diverse sort of range of gravel riding territory. So my favourite, or one of my favourites, is the New Forest, because you can go there year round and they have these wide, wonderful gravelly tracks that go on for miles and miles and miles, and you don't get muddy, which is a miracle. Whereas if you're riding around Bristol in the winter, you're going to be caked. I think if you're riding around Bristol in the winter on the road, you're probably going to get pretty filthy too. But there's certainly places that you can head for like a fun all-weather gravel ride, whether that's, you know, the New Forest or the big wide gravel tracks of mid Wales, or, you know, Scotland's absolutely blessed with all these forestry tracks, rather than going for the narrower single track bridleways that might have had a lot of other like foot traffic or riding, horse riding traffic and cycle traffic that tend to get a bit boggier as well. How about you, Jack? What about around the Midlands? Are there any sort of like go-to byways, bridleways, or is it just sort of like see what you find on your ride?
Yeah, there are a number of bridleways in Warwickshire, which is east of Birmingham. And that land's quite flat, dominated by river valleys. And most of the time, the bridleways are pretty heavy going in winter. So on the likes of commutes, often people will leave a note on a favourite track that they've noted down and say, best avoided in winter. And I always look out for that and always trust it, because they've put it there for a reason. But if you switch over to Worcestershire, it's slightly firmer rock, so it drains a bit better. Being slightly hillier, and somewhere like the Clent Hills, where we did a lot of our Rafa Day and Hell ride mainly on road bikes, but the gravel trails there are really good, and it is quite a firm surface. And then probably this is a bit further out, and it's having mentioned that sometimes you do need to take roads to get to a good destination for gravel riding, that's what I tend to do if I was going further afield, say into the Wye Forest or Kinver, where there's lots of forestry trails out there. But yeah, it's really, really good uninterrupted riding, sort of mile after mile. But to get out there in a reasonable time, you do need to do a fair bit of road. So obviously that influences the length of your ride, the speed and what tires you're going for. But I'd say those are my favourite areas. And then sometimes the inner city towpaths as well. Mm-hmm. That can be quite a fun ride, just to sort of urban explore. Go right round the top of Birmingham, see the Spaghetti Junction, where all the motorways cross. It's a different kind of gravel beauty.
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually one of my favourite things about living in Bristol, actually, is that in all the parks you can actually legally ride through, even though they're technically footpaths. They're permissive as long as you're considerate, which I think you should be anyway. And it's really great. You can forget about planning almost. You know, you don't have to plot out a route just so that you can follow the breadcrumbs. And you can have a really fun time just noodling about in the woods or sort of these little urban places, and then sort of like finish in a nice little pub or cafe or something for dinner and wind your way home. So I think there's planning a route or an idea, but you don't always have to have a solid route. And you might be out on a lane somewhere in the middle of nowhere, sort of following a route. And then all of a sudden, there's like a bridleway that you didn't even realise was there. And you don't, just because you've made a route doesn't mean that you have to stick to it. You could just be like, oh, I'm going to go and explore that and see how that goes. And it could be disastrous or it could be amazing. But you won't know until you've gone down there, do you?
I had that exact experience this weekend, actually. Oh, God. I was in the Y and I was like going down this road and I was like, oh, look, there's a bridle path up there. And the first like half of the bridle path was like so steep. You're like pushing and pushing and pushing over these like massive rocks. But then at the top, it was this like amazing like sunken bridle way with all these like trees. And there was like bluebell woods on each side and it was beautiful. I was like, it was worth the push, you know, but I didn't really know what was up there. So it's quite fun just having that like, oh, see what happens. Yeah.
How about for you, Gabby, in the Alps? Are there particular areas that you know will be full of amazing gravel trails that you head for? Or do you sort of like make it up as you go along?
One thing that we have here that's always like pretty good and pretty fun, which I suppose you often have everywhere, is really good river trails. So often if I don't want to set out and know that I'm going to be doing some ginormous climb, I'll like head for like an area where there's like a river trail. And then often there's also some woodland either side and just tons of like fun stuff to play around on and like practice some skills and just like have a good time. I also spend a lot of time just looking at the map, and one of the really cool things for me is I love how, like you said, you can ride some road, ride some gravel, but the gravel sections often allow you to link up places that otherwise you couldn't. So yeah, I'm quite obsessed with like looking at the map and trying to figure out what I can join together and make different loops with.
Yeah, definitely. I had exactly that the other day, actually. I was riding down and out of Ashburton in southern Dartmoor on a road ride on a fancy aero road bike with 28 mil tyres. So that's fairly wide. And we were going up this lane and I could see on my map, on my head unit, that there was like a little dashed line sort of linking up the end of this lane, which the signposts were saying sort of dead end. And then there was another lane just a few hundred metres. And it turned out that it was just a few hundred metres of bridle way. And thank goodness it was dry, because it would have otherwise been very muddy. And it was actually really good fun on our road bikes, just cutting through. And it was like, yeah, a way of avoiding a busier main road on this lovely little lane and a tiny bit of bridle way. So that worked out really well.
I did the exact same thing on Sunday when I was out my Canyon Ultimate CFSLX, which has got 40 mil carbon rims and also 28 mil tyres. And
yeah.
I was just pootling around Warwickshire, around sort of Tamworth and Arden, and came to where this road service down this lane was deteriorating. And I thought, it said unsuitable for motor vehicles, but I thought, well, they ride Paris-Roubaix on things like this.
I'll have
a go. And I actually managed to find my way through. I thought it was going to be quite dry, and then I actually came out on a road that I did know but had never come through that cut through before. So come winter, I'll obviously do it on the cross tires or gravel bike. But when it was dry, it was fine to do on a sort of carbon race bike. It was good fun.
I think maybe we get it into our heads that, you know, when you have a fancy road bike, you absolutely must stick to tarmac all the time. And there's probably something to do with warranties, and I probably shouldn't be advising anyone that they completely ignore that. But I've certainly found that since I've been gravel riding, I've been a lot more adventurous sort of when I do go back onto the road, and actually really enjoy a bit of like off-roading. Good bit of road bikes off-road, never hurt anyone.
Test the skills out.
Yeah, exactly. I think seeing as we're talking about planning gravel routes, it would be amiss to not mention the legality of it. So here in the UK, at least, we have quite stringent rules about where you can and can't ride. We have a number of different public rights of way. So you can ride on a bridle way, which is open to cyclists, horse riders and pedestrians. You can ride on a byway, which is open to all of those, plus light motorised traffic, like sort of off-road motorbikes, that sort of thing, or restricted byways, which are open to, again, horse riders, pedestrians and cyclists, but not motorised traffic. So that gives you a really good idea of like where you can legally ride, but not on footpaths. That is an offence, a civil offence, I think, rather than criminal, but that's by the by. So they're best avoided. Although, of course, you can, if it is a short section, like we were saying with the road and gravelly bits, you can get off, dismount, and technically you're a pedestrian and push your bike along short sections of footpath. Robin, you did the West Curnow Way, didn't you, last year? I think there's a few little sections of that where you technically have to push your bike sort of up from the sand dunes. I think it was Kennock Sands.
Yes.
Up to Regain. And it makes the route make perfect sense, because even though, you know, it's a short bit of push, and to be honest, it was so steep that I don't think I could ride it anyway, it means that you get to enjoy that beautiful beach and sort of loop out at the other end. Otherwise, you miss it entirely. Gabby, with your infinite route planning experience, do you have any other top tips for planning online?
Often what I'll do if I'm not sure on a route is I'll switch the map into sport-specific mapping, which is available on Komoot. So I'll be using the gravel algorithm, but I'll switch into the mountain bike map, which then just shows you really, really clearly where there might be any single track or any trails, or just to give you an idea where there might be some good off-road riding. And then you can zoom in and check in more detail if that would be suitable for a gravel bike. I'll also switch into the road overlay. This makes all the long distance cycleways really clear. And then I'll know that if I do want to do a road section and there is a specific long distance cycle route, then often that's going to be a really good choice of a road to ride on, not too busy and often a bit more scenic. And if I'm really unsure, I'll put it into the satellite mode. And then what you can do if there's an area where there's like little information, so there might not be any highlights that already exist or anything like that, I'll zoom right in. And if I've already got my tour line over that section of the route, you can press the letter M on your keyboard and it will just lift the line. So then you can see underneath and you get a really good bird's eye view. So you can then see if it's double track, single track, and how it looks. And then you get a really good idea of what to expect.
Nice, nice. And you said there again, that's a really good point about established long distance routes. Like in the UK, we've got the National Cycle Network, which is excellent, put together by SusTrans. And of course, alongside that, there's also loads of routes that are probably not waymarked. Things like the West Curnow Way or the King Alfred's Way, sort of relatively recently put together, or, you know, other bike packing routes. For someone who's relatively new to gravel riding, would you recommend just taking off little chunks of something like that? Or would you recommend that they plan completely from scratch?
I definitely think, having done both of those ones you mentioned, I think it's quite nice having had other people who've like ridden the route before, and they probably will have put in some nice bits, keep you off any A roads. They know it's going to be a good view, and they'll usually have like marks along the way being like, you know, there's a train station here or there's a cafe here. So I think probably if you are starting out, they are quite good to maybe just to do a chunk of it or the whole thing if you really want a challenge. Yeah, rather than just going off to do your own thing. Although if you do want to do your own thing, that's also very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely benefits to both, aren't there?
Yeah, as much as I like poring over OS maps, whether on the app or actually a good old paper map, and just looking somewhere that I want to ride and thinking, oh, that's a bridleway there and this goes here, I can take it left, I can take it right, and then maybe actually putting that route through something like Komoot or Strava at the same time. But I think for anything more long distance, using an established NCN, we're so lucky with those here in the UK, and often they'll, if you buy the accompanying map, they'll signal this is an off-road sector, which would be great on a gravel bike. But if you're on a road bike, here's a detour.
Yeah, definitely.
And that established knowledge, although the road surfaces can change based on the seasons, that I think that's really indispensable if you're venturing further afield out of somewhere you know particularly well.
Yeah, definitely. And just because something is like a 7-day tour doesn't mean that off the bat you have to go and do all 7 days. Break it down, do half a day. A lot of these routes align really nicely with train lines. And, you know, putting our sensible hats on, as you alluded to there, Robin, it's a really good idea to have pre-planned any potential sort of exit points. Again, with my guide hat on, if there is an emergency and you know, your bike is beyond repair, or you've had, a little off and you'd like to see medical attention and that sort of thing, then it is good to know where your local exit points are going to be, how to get off a mountain or how to get to a train station, that sort of thing.
These guides are also likely to advise you when you need to be fully fueled and watered. For example, on the Celtic Trail, I use the off-road NCN 47 between Pontypridd and Neath. And it warned in my map, the SusTrans map that I got, make sure you've got 2 full bottles and plenty of food, because this 40-kilometre gravel sector is really, really hard, rough, and lots of climbing.
And cafes.
Definitely no cafes. It wasn't a nice sort of bike park in the valleys. This was quite barren, actually. And I was really glad I heeded that advice and had a few sort of emergency gels as well, because coming to the end of it, I was absolutely bushed and quite glad to be in Neath. to fill up, to like actually sort of get a Coke and some proper food. But if I hadn't had snacks with me on that section, I would have been really hungry because it took a good 2.5 hours. And that's another good point. That 40 kilometers on the road, could do that in just over an hour on a road bike.
Well,
but yeah, sort of. But yeah, when you're lugging bags on a multi-day trip, or just on an altogether heavier bike with bigger tires, you're going to need to take a lot longer.
Absolutely. And yeah, your snack ratio, you're going to need a lot more snacks. I remember first getting into gravel riding and I was training for quite a long event and I literally just ended up with a whole bum bag full of sandwiches. You know, you don't have to go down the bars and gels sort of route. You can just have actual food or, you know, stop in cafes and things. So make sure you've got enough snacks. Well, thank you all very much for joining and sharing your embarrassing, funny stories and experience. We've all made these mistakes, and I think that's part of how you learn. And I'm sure, no doubt, that a lot of other people listening will be nodding along to that as well. If you enjoy this podcast, do leave us a review. It really does help us out. And make sure you subscribe to the Bike Radar podcast while you're there. And tune in next week for episode 5 of our Gravelly series, where we're going to be asking the all-important question, are gravel bikes just mountain bikes from the 90s? Until then, ta-ra!
Thanks for listening to the Bike Radar podcast. If you've not done so already, please subscribe and share with your friends, or leave us a rating if you've enjoyed this episode.